Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Well, hello everyone from the remote jungles of Greencastle, Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson, and you are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this magical network we call Blog Talk Radio. We have a fantastic show planned tonight. Joining us from one of the greatest bands of all time, yes, Tony Kay, keyboardist with Yes. Founding member of the band, is going to be our guest tonight. We're going to have a chance to chat and learn a little rock and roll history with one of the most amazing musical artists ever. So we're really looking forward to tonight. As always, handling the technical responsibilities, our studio producer, Melissa Hovey, and our technical engineer, Wayne Larson. Music done by Jim Johnson, and from the massive Wild World News Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, the honorable, distinguished, and always humble Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
Well, good evening, Mr. Batson. How's everything at Wildlife Educational Services?
Well, it's all good. We've got, we've had a mild winter. The bears still want to not be that active, but they are. And I think we've only had just a few days of sub-zero weather, which is quite unusual for this part of the country. So,
Your alligators are happy about that, too.
Well, they're in a heated building. It's 80 degrees all the time. So, they could really care. Though they were looking outside today. I think they saw the green grass. And I hate to say this, but my wife has a couple flowers that have actually bloomed this week. So, spring
is unbelievable for this time of the year.
It is absolutely unbelievable. The following portion of Larry Batson's Wild World is brought to you by Alphabet Swamp, the new children's book by Cheryl and Larry Batson. Order your autographed copy today at www.larrytheanimalguy.com or send check or money order for $10 per copy. That's autographed to WES 4140 North, 600 West, Greencastle, Indiana, 46135. Shipping and handling is included.
It's now time from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
This is Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News for February the 16th. And as we were talking before the show, we mentioned I hope Tony Kay's not mad at me after this, but we'll see. If I could have your time and a word.
Yeah.
Yesterday.
Yeah.
Staff at the Georgia Sea Turtle Center bid farewell to Ziva, a green sea turtle who was flown to Sea Life Arizona in Tempe, where it will share a 161,000 gallon tank with a lot of other sea creatures.
Wow.
Now, Ziva was severely wounded in 2010 in a boat collision off the coast of Florida.
Mm.
So she was rescued, brought back to health. It took a couple of years, but she can't be returned back into the ocean, but she can make a lot of visitors there at the Sea Life Arizona happy.
Well, and too, when you see something like that in captivity, they're the ambassadors for the wild ones.
And here's the good news. I heard she flew first class, and there was free champagne.
Oh, well, fantastic.
Okay, I made that last part out.
Okay.
All right, now, if you're looking for something to do in Dover, Delaware, you could be a frog detective.
Uh-oh.
The State Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control is seeking volunteers for a frog survey. Now, potential volunteers need to have a car, internet access, and be willing to sit alongside a road at night listening for frog calls.
Hmm.
Now, three surveys are conducted from February to July each year.
I've done that before.
Sounds like a pretty good job to me.
Yeah, it is. It's quite interesting. Quite amazing, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, frogs at night.
Yeah.
All right, now here's a news flash.
Uh-oh.
Jackson, Wyoming, people are keeping an eye out for moose.
The
animals have been spotted in subdivisions and in a town near Snow King Resort. Now, Fish and Game spokesperson said that the animals can get stressed out and become very dangerous.
They're big animals, and they don't see very well, and they have short tempers. And yes, they can create big problems.
So be on the lookout for moose.
Yeah.
And possibly a flying squirrel.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, next story. Talk, say no more, talk, say
yeah.
no more.
Yeah.
Well, let's head off to Honolulu, Hawaii. Governor Neil Abercrombie declared February as Humpback Whale Awareness Month.
Oh.
He said the species represents the diversity of ocean life around the Hawaiian Islands and reflects the connection of the people of Hawaii, the connection that the people of Hawaii have with the ocean. Now, every year about 10,000 humpbacks swim to Hawaii to breed and calve. So they're on their way. And as we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, you can sign up for it and be a whale watcher.
Yeah, I bet they have no shortage of volunteers for that job. Boy, that sounds fantastic. Hawaiian
we
weather.
We volunteered, but we didn't get any response.
I did volunteer, and they haven't called me yet. So I'm
all
a little
right,
upset.
Let's head off to Florida for our next story.
Okay.
It takes one to know one.
Oh.
The mystery monkey of Tampa Bay has put down roots in a backyard. The Tampa Bay Times did not reveal the home's location, but said the rhesus macaque monkey is calm and friendly. Now, listen to this. The monkey escaped capture in 2009, even though he was shot repeatedly by dart guns as he traveled from Pasco County to Clearwater and eventually Pinellas County.
There's a lot of non-native wildlife running amok in Florida, so that's not unusual. In fact, my good friend and God rest his soul, Jungle Larry, down at the Naples African Safari Park.
Great.
He had an island filled with squirrel monkeys, and one year they had a drought, and the water around the island dried up. So 200 squirrel monkeys fleed, and now they're running among the community of Naples,
yeah.
Florida. Yeah.
Now, there's nothing cuter than a squirrel monkey.
That's for sure.
All right, now, for you inmates in Carson City, Nevada.
Oh, listeners.
Yours is no disgrace.
Oh, well.
More than a dozen wild Mustangs trained by inmates have been sold for a combined $8,300 at an adoption auction at the Northern Nevada Correctional Center. Now, the horses were gathered in 2010 from areas in Nevada, Idaho, and California. Inmates saddle train the animals for about 4 months before the horses are put up for adoption to the highest bidder.
Well, that always does quite well, so we hope they have great success with that.
Seems to be working so far. Now, here's a good idea.
Okay.
Something's coming.
Uh-oh.
To Little Rock, Arkansas.
Oh.
Now, this is a good idea. A new fishing hole is opening in Clay County. Mom's Lake near Corning is the latest addition to the family and community fishing program. Ben Williams Jr. and his family donated the 9-acre lake so that children, seniors, and disabled anglers would have a place to fish.
Mm-hmm.
Now the lake features bluegill, red ear, brim, and largemouth bass. Now, Mom's Lake can only be fished by persons 15 years and younger, or 65 and older, or holders of a disability license.
Wow, that's a great idea.
It is a great idea.
You know, fishing is a sport that everybody can enjoy. Well, except the fish.
Right.
Bad day for the fish.
Now, I was hoping for a badger story this week.
Yeah.
There were no badgers in the news.
Oh, man.
But I do have a badger story that involves you. I think we told this story one other time on the show. You were preparing for one of your educational programs, and you asked me to go out and load up one of the badgers. And at that time, you didn't have one live badger. You had two.
Yeah, yes, we did.
And I said, Larry, I can't tell them apart. One of them's really mean, and one of them's nice. And what did you tell me?
I forgot what I told you.
You said just grab one and you'll know right away whether it's the nice one or the mean one.
That sounds like something I would tell you.
That's right.
How did that go, by the way?
Wild World News for February the 16th.
Well, thanks, Dr. Day. Once again, a fantastic job done by Dr. Henry Day and his staff at the Wild World News headquarters in Indianapolis, Indiana. We want to tell everyone to check out my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, and our brand new Facebook page, Larry the Animal Guy and Friends, filled with photos and information about our animal family. Also, RadioMom.fm, the home of the Radio Mom Shop, where you can save 50, 60, 70% on vacations, restaurants, and a variety of other goods and services. And why not listen to my show, The 70s on Sunday, 12 to 7 each Sunday at RadioMom.fm. Also, McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado, on the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park. We call it God's Country. Go to their website, info@McGregorMountainLodge.com. Those are a few of our underwriters that make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
Yesterday a morning came, a smile upon your face. Jesus, Father's morning glory, silly human race.
Member, keyboard extraordinaire, Tony Kay joins us from his home in Los Angeles, California. What an honor it is to have you on the show tonight, Tony. Welcome.
Hello, Larry, from the wild world of Hollywood, Los Angeles. It's good to be with you.
Well, I have to tell you, I haven't heard that track in a while, and that just absolutely gave me cold chills. Wow.
Well, I actually just played it a couple of days ago, doing a remake of it for a tribute album that my friend and compatriot Billy Sherwood is doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I just become reacquainted with it.
What a fantastic piece of music. And I know you co-wrote that song. From the bass lines, and when that Hammond organ crashes in there with that line, that is just extraordinary.
Well, thank you.
Just unbelievable. How did it, you know, I was going through some information, you know, you were put in front of a piano at 4 years of age and received piano lessons, and you had dreams of becoming a classical pianist, and all of a sudden the rock and roll bug hit you. How did that all happen?
Well, actually, I think it was, I think I was two. Yeah, my grandmother was a concert pianist, and she had a piano at the house, and at a very, very early age, I was put upon her knee and introduced to the piano. And, of course, studied classical piano for a number of years, for about 15 years, actually.
Wow.
And with the intention of being a classical piano player, as you say, until, you know, rock and roll intervened.
Well, you know, a piano, because I play as well, but a piano is an orchestra in itself, I've always thought.
Well, it is. It's an amazing instrument, my first instrument. And, you know, what can you say about piano? It's a beautiful, beautiful instrument to play, as many people have found out and given up.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not one of the easy ones, but you know, they're all difficult in their own way. Of course, I really attached myself to the Hammond organ later, and that really became my instrument. Not so much the piano, but the Hammond was my love. After watching, I don't know whether you know or remember, a band called the Grand Bond Organization.
Yes.
With Jack Bruce and Ginger Baker. And I remember going to a club in my hometown, and I think I was 16 or 17, and there was, you know, this band, Grand Bond, on a Hammond organ, full volume, and I'd never heard anything like it, so I was very attracted to it from that moment on.
Well, it has such a Hammond B3 through a Leslie has such an extraordinary sound. I mean, it's just so powerful and has, you know, driven so many bands. You know, if we could go back through the list, Uriah Heep, I'm sure it goes on and on. Lee Michaels was one I was always, I don't know if you remember him, but
sure.
Yeah, had one hit wonder, but it's just a Hammond B3 and a drummer. You know what I mean? What a fantastic! I mean, once again, it's almost like a full orchestra in itself.
Yeah, it was it was really the instrument, especially, you know, after I heard Graham and later people like Brian Auger and of course later Keith Emerson, mm-hmm. where you could actually with a cranked up Hammond B3 and a Leslie can actually compete with a guitar player, which was something you couldn't do with a piano, and it was quite appealing.
I'll bet. So you get in with this group of guys, which would turn out to be just extraordinary, that would become the band Yes. How did that all come about? John Anderson, Peter Banks, Chris Squire.
Well, I've been playing with bands and playing with bands in Europe. You know, we all went off to Germany in the early 60s with different bands, you know, mostly sort of blues-based bands that we, from records that we've been listening to, you know, from early, well, not even British radio. It really hadn't reached radio at that time, but we managed to get, because, you know, post-war in England and of course Germany was occupied, and you know, the occupiers were American servicemen, and they had access to American music. That's where we first found it and heard it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very fortunate circumstance, although, you know, quite quite a sad thing, you know, really. yeah. England wasn't exactly occupied, but it did have a lot of American bases. Mm-hmm. And that's where we first got our music from, and eventually ended up in Germany playing to the American troops over there that had, you know, stayed in Germany and occupied Germany after the Second World War. That was really, you know, where we got our influences from, and had access to listen and buy the records that really you couldn't hear anywhere else.
So who were you instrumental in creating the original sound of that band, or was it just everyone? And
well, we you know, everyone was doing different things. Chris mm-hmm. had a band called The Sin, and you know, John had a band called The Warriors, and we all ended up in London at one point or another around mm-hmm. about 1965, 1966. And, you know, it was a very sort of centralized little music scene there in those days, and it was all centered around Soho and Tin Pan Alley. And really the center of the action in those days was the Marquee Club, where a lot of people
right.
originated from. I mean, I used to go down, see the Clapton and, you know, the blues bands of the day, the Rolling Stones.
Oh, yeah.
And so the Marquee Club was a place where we all gravitated to. And next door to the Marquee Club was a little drinking hall called the Shaft Club. And then a little ways up the road, all on Wardour Street in Soho, was the Ship, a British pub. And it was full of musicians, you know, and we gradually all got to know each other. And gradually, mostly in the Shaft Club next to the Marquee, we got together. I met up with Chris and John, and at that time, Peter Banks, who was the guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, I mean, it just happened. So, you know, it was just a case of meeting like-minded people. And,
sure.
You know, we were all digging the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and, you know, Keith Emerson, of course, started there, too, with a band called The Knife.
Right.
And so a lot of people came out of that little, you know, area, a little watering hole where we used to hang out at nighttime. Of course, we were 20 years old.
So long ago, huh? Seems like yesterday.
So long ago. Great memories, though, of those, those days.
Were you there when Jimi Hendrix started playing in London?
I did. You know, I became very good friends with Jimmy. In fact,
oh, you did.
I met Jimmy on the streets of Soho when he actually had first landed in London, and he was an extraordinary looking person, and I actually went up to him.
Yeah.
And he literally had just landed, and he had no money, and I took him to a sort of greasy breakfast place called the Gioconda, the
yeah.
Gioconda Cafe, and we, you know, we became friends, kept in touch for a long time after that.
He always impressed me as being a very gentle soul.
He was great.
So special, and what a great contribution he gave us. That's just too bad it was so short. In fact, I had heard somewhere, and you may correct me on this, that I heard that before his passing that he had plans to do an album or work with Miles Davis.
Yes, I think that's true. I was with him at a party the night he died, and the night before we were at where were we? We were at Ronnie Scott's club,
mm-hmm.
Which obviously, I mean, you know Ronnie Scott. It was a great, great jazz watering hole where I saw Miles Davis and all kinds of, you know, great American jazz artists. I'd gone down with Jimmy Lanai to see War,
mm-hmm.
with Eric Burdon.
Wow.
And we were backstage, and they asked Jimmy to come on stage. And he was not in good shape at that time and was quite depressed by his performance. And I think the next day or 2 days later, he died.
Quite a shock to the musical community, I know. Like we said, what a great spirit. Do you remember your first jam session or rehearsal with the members of Yes?
Yes, I do. We were rehearsing in Soho in a little dungeon for quite a long time, mostly financed by the guys from the Marquee and the Shaft Club,
mm-hmm.
Two guys who were who had become friends and were interested in what we were doing, and we spent months in this little dungeon experimenting and trying to find out. We had nothing, no original material at that time.
Yeah.
And in fact, you know, as you probably know, we did remakes of quite a few, you know, other people's songs at that time, including the Beatles and Richie Havens, and you know, that was really what we were doing at that time, because we hadn't really written anything original.
Well, I remember. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Cool.
No, I remember a great track that you guys had done on your first album, "Every Little Thing" by the Beatles, and I thought it was a fantastic arrangement. And
right, yeah, we wanted to do something different, but you know, experiment with arrangements really, and take other people's songs and you know, do something with them, and that eventually got us into the Marquee Club, which was a very, you know, treasured, very treasured gig, and we had a residency there with Keith Emerson's band. I think we were Tuesday nights and they were Wednesday nights, and we did that for weeks, and played at you know, local clubs, Speakeasy,
mm-hmm.
famous Speakeasy in London, and another club that actually one of our sort of breakout nights. It was called Blazes,
mm-hmm.
and Sly and the Family Stone was supposed to play there that night, and of course everyone wanted to see them. The Beatles were there, Stones were there, and of course, you know, Fly, he didn't turn up, and we were actually all, you know, the band lived in a house,
uh-huh.
in Kensington, and we were all there together, and the manager of Blazes called us up and said, would you come and play?
Yeah,
and so we got down there with our equipment, and you know, the place was full of rock and roll nobility.
Yeah,
and that was our sort of debut, really.
Wow, and I'll bet it went well.
It was a great night. Yeah, I don't think everyone had come to see the funk and. Sly and Family Stone, and I don't think they could believe actually what they were listening to with us.
Well, powerful arrangements, I mean, musically. I have a question. When you guys, I know you being a classically trained pianist, did you actually do charts? Did you read music for your pieces that you did with Yes?
No.
All by
you. No, it was, you know, it was something that that really you had to separate yourself
mm-hmm.
from, you know, that sort of classical influence. There was a lot of keyboard players at the time who, you know, like Rick, you know, who took over from me,
right.
who had classical training, and Rick probably more than myself, but it was something really you had to leave behind because, you know, that side of music was all charts. It was, you know, reading incredible classical music from, you know, 200 years before. But I've been playing actually with sort of bluesy bass bands, you know, when I decided to go off to Germany and tour around Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the blues is not charted, so you
right.
you really have to sort of
yeah.
put that whole sort of thing, you know, in another place.
Exactly. Well, it had to give you a little bit of an advantage to be able to read music and use the phrasing and the progressions and so forth. And the new
yeah,
music.
Yeah, it's only the technical training, the technical ability.
Yeah.
To be able to do it, but in actual fact, you know, you really had to leave it behind to play rock and roll.
Well, our guest tonight, Tony Kaye from Yes and Circa and Badfinger, a number of bands, a fantastic musical career. We're going to take a short break, everybody. We'll be right back. You are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
It's coming. The first annual Chautauqua Lake Bigfoot Expo, May 6th at the Chautauqua Suites in Mayville, New York. Meet experts Melissa Hovey and Steve Coles from television's Monster Quest on the Discovery Channel. Wildlife expert Larry Batson and Bigfoot researcher Billy Willard are also a part of the first annual Bigfoot Expo. Make your reservation and buy tickets now at www.chautauqualakebigfoot.com. Don't miss the first annual Chautauqua Lake Bigfoot Expo May 6th at the Chautauqua Suites in Mayville, New York.
This week's episode, Bobcat in the Cave.
Gosh, Johnny, playing in the cave sure is neat.
Oh, boy, a kitty cat.
Cassie, the kitty cat's yelling.
What, Cassie? It's not a kitty? It's a bobcat? Speaking of cats, you like to stress the importance of adopting cats from animal shelters? Over 5 million cats go into animal shelters every year? And with millions of healthy cats to choose from, it's a shame more people don't adopt from shelters?
It's Bobcat Heavy. Help, Sassy!
Why bother? We'll just get into more trouble tomorrow?
What's that supposed to mean? Oh, nuts.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest, near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com. Only you
can prevent wildfires.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
This is Larry Batson. You are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this magical network we call Blog Talk Radio. And a big hello to our listeners around the world, Australia, New Zealand, Ireland, England. We know they're tuning in this week for a fantastic show with founding member of the group, yes, Tony Kay, and he'll be back with us in just a few moments. We want to remind everyone that you can download all of our shows from the past. Gosh, there has to be well over 100. And we've had some good ones, just like tonight, so we encourage you to do so. Tell your friends as well. Next week on the show, new rock and roller Betty Moon will be with us, and we're going to introduce her to the world next week, so we're very excited about that. We also want to thank iKids Fishing. iKidsFishing.com is the first kids fishing show in the USA, starring kids, teaching kids how to fish. 40 million fishermen spending $45 billion a year. The iKids Fishing Show is a keeper. More info at We Want You Cottages at Chautauqua Lake in Western New York. That website is www.wewanchu.com, one of America's finest fishing resorts. Also, Tire Service Plus and owner Jerry Jones taking care of America's auto maintenance needs. They keep our animal truck on the road, traveling thousands of miles with our wild animal ambassadors. Give them a call, 317-243-0700. And also our individual underwriters that help support our show. And go to my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, and I'll tell you how you can help keep Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Those are a few of our underwriters that make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio. Idea where that track came from, Tony.
I was just trying to figure out what
in the hell was that?
What in the wild world?
Yeah, I didn't quite see how it fit in either. But
well, we'll have to talk to Jim Johnson. I was anticipating Circa playing Roundabout, and that obviously was not it. So I apologize to our distinguished guest tonight. I don't know what
happened. It's definitely not Circa playing Roundabout.
No, it's not. So, changing the subject, once again, my apologies. So you end up leaving us. In fact, on a previous conversation that we'd had, I asked you about the Moog synthesizer, and you said that was basically the reason that you left Yes, because they wanted you to play one.
Well, I wouldn't say that it was the only reason, but, Yeah, the Moog synthesizer and the Mellotron had come into some sort of fashion with some bands, and obviously was especially with the Mellotron, a sort of orchestral thing that bands wanted. And Yes, was one of those bands that they were developing, and it was they were instruments that intrigued John. We'd already done the second album before the Yes album, which was a breakout album, had been done with an orchestra, and he was very much into that, and fortunately I wasn't. It was not exactly pleasing to my ears.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I love the orchestras, and but you can never keep them in tune. For one
right.
thing, they kind of sounded like strangled cats to me. So it was not really, the purity was not really that pleasant to my ear, and. So I resisted, and it went a long way for my departure from the band. Strangely enough, I did actually buy both of them for my band that I had, and we actually supported Yes with my band Badger.
Yeah.
We supported Yes at a concert that was recorded, and of course one live Badger, who you referenced earlier in your. Mm-hmm. Many references.
Yes.
And I did try them with the band, and actually had them on stage for that concert. I think it was maybe a couple of weeks later at another concert that they just got the better of me, and I couldn't take it any longer, and I actually pushed them off stage.
You did.
And they splintered into 1,000 pieces, and fortunately it was a very high stage.
Yeah.
And that was it. I never, until 1985, although I did use a couple of synths with when I played with David Bowie in the mid 70s.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the Mellotron and the Mini Moog went, I declined. And of course, by the time we started doing 90125, obviously, equipment had gotten a little more sophisticated.
Oh, my Lord, yes. Well, I had always heard that the Mellotrons especially didn't travel well.
No, it didn't. It was very flimsy and had tapes that went over a recording head, actually a playback head.
Mm-hmm.
And they were loose of tape, and it was, not an optimum way of playing anything, especially with keys. And for me, just was never in tune.
So, what was the experience with David Bowie like? How did that all come about?
It was, I mean, it's David Bowie. What can I say? I mean, it was incredible. I just come out of Yes, and I had decided to that I'd had enough of London, and I just moved lock, stock, and barrel to Los Angeles. I toured with Yes here, had really grown very, very fond of the States.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it seemed like home to me.
Mm-hmm.
I obviously, as an Englishman, I'd always been intrigued by America and American music, and I loved a lot of different American music, blues oriented mostly, and my favorite band was The Band.
Oh yeah.
of course, and I just loved it here. So I just sold everything and moved here and moved into the famous Riot House on Sunset Strip. You know, and started a new life, and it was just a chance meeting that I had with David Bowie's tour manager, actually on my birthday at the famous Rainbow Bar and Grill.
Whoa.
on Sunset.
Yeah,
and he was in there, I was in there celebrating my birthday, and he came up to me and said, can you be in Jamaica tomorrow? And I said, well, yeah, I guess I can. And he said, well, there'll be a limousine waiting for you at 8:30 in the morning. Sure enough, there it was. And that day I was at Keith Richards' house in Jamaica playing with David Bowie. Oh, and an amazing band, you know. It was that Station to Station band was incredible. And actually, I just through Facebook got in touch with Carlos Alomar, who was the musical director, who I haven't spoken to in 20 years, you know. So,
wow.
Thank you, Facebook.
Facebook is amazing social media. It's just extraordinary.
Yes, it's brought me into contact with so many people that I'd lost contact with. I mean, it's so great, you know. Such
I know.
A positive energy on there that we're all meeting each other. It's it's really cool.
It's very cool. So now, what was the material you were doing with Bowie at that time? I'm not familiar.
He just brought out Station to Station, which kind of funky, you know, funky David at the time, and he was a thin white duke, you know, with the red hair and Germany, and the white shirt and waistcoat, and it was sort of like Berlin, you know, the entire stage, and of course we were playing stadiums and huge arenas, and the stage was bathed in white, and there were no colored lights. It was just a white stage, white tubes at the back of the stage, fluorescent lights. It was, it was built in, revisited, and an amazing tour, an amazing band, you know, black session guys from New York.
Wow.
Headed by Carlos. And I was, you know, this sort of white English guy in the middle, fortunately playing, you know, Hammond and piano, and
yeah.
it was 2 years of just fantastic madness.
I'll bet.
Great time.
Did
people.
I can't imagine. Did the black people say that you talk funny though, Tony?
They thought that I was really strange. Yeah, I don't know how they put up with me, but I love them, and you know, I just actually recorded the second Badger album and spent 9 months in New Orleans with Alan Toussaint, who I was a huge fan of, and one of the great blues guys, and you know, had spent 9 months with a different Badger band, Jackie Lomax and the guys from Ashton Gardner and Dyke, from England. It was a sort of a revamped band, and you know, thrown into an incredible sort of Bourbon Street blues thing, which suited me perfectly.
Well, you've played so many different genres. I mean, gosh, it had to be, each one had to be just a eye-opening moment that you thought, gosh, this job is just too cool. I mean, I'm having too much fun.
Well, certainly with David, and what went on that tour was pretty amazing. I don't think even with Yes, because I missed out on the big the big concerts of the early 70s with them. So I'd only been over here. We'd come over 69, I think, 69, 70, and did sort of big shows, big tours with people like Alice Cooper and Jethro Tull. So I got a few big shows, but night after night with David was
amazing,
beyond anything. It was great, and he was great. Total, amazing. Amazing person, super guy, great guy, very intelligent, very, traveled around with a library.
He did.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my gosh! And then all in the middle of all this, touring with Bowie, and then you did things with Badfinger and Badger. You auditioned for This Is Spinal Tap.
Shall we not go there?
That is not a problem. Did I hit a sour note? I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I did very very briefly. I knew the drummer in who got the job in Spinal Tap, and I went to the studio. But actually, it was the timing was not perfect because the next day I got a call from Chris Squire to get on a plane to go to England. So it was never meant to be. And probably, although one of my favorite movies of all time, and according to the guys, according to the Spinal Tap guys, was actually based on Yes and Black Sabbath.
Well,
and you can see a lot of the 70s Yes, isms in there, the pods.
Well,
but it was not to be, and I'm
so sorry.
Probably,
I'm sorry. I brought it up. And then you get with Chris and Squire again,
we talked about it. I met Chris in Florida, in Miami, at a gig. He was on the drama tour with Trevor Horn and Jeff Downs, and strangely enough, I was living in a house on Key Biscayne next door to his wife and kids. And I'd met them, I think, the day before, and heard they were coming to town. Anyway, we got together and talked about doing something, and sure enough, a year later, he had met up with Trevor Rabin, who lived here in Los Angeles, and we got together and eventually, move to England to do that. Of course, it wasn't Yes at the time. It was a completely different band. It was Alan and Chris and Trevor and myself. We were called Cinema, and we called it 90125 until John appeared in London. He flew in from France and came to the studio and really liked the album, and so the record company suggested that he sang on it, it all started there,
and basically
a big success.
Wasn't it the greatest success of any Yes album, 90125?
Yeah, sure. By far, it was number one single, number one album, and a huge tour for 2 years. We toured for 2 years with that album.
Well, I will have to tell you, I did see that tour when you were in Indianapolis at then Market Square Arena, which is now gone.
And right, yeah.
Yeah, and we were arriving late, Tony, my wife and I, and we could hear the a cappella song from the album. Oh, I can't think what it was. Changes? I'm thinking it's the name of it or something.
Leave it. Yeah.
And we're in the lobby where we can't actually see the stage, and we're not in the main arena, and we're hearing this. And I'm saying, my gosh, they're playing Leave It. The recording of the band must not have started as of yet. So we walked through into the arena and got to our seats and realized that you guys were actually doing this live. And it was it was amazing. And the whole show was just like, my gosh, this is incredible. I mean, it's to this day one of the best concerts that I'd ever had a chance to see. I thought it was a fantastic.
Yes, it was. It was very, very special. You know, everything sort of came together. Everything gelled. Hugely successful. You know, crossover album. A lot of people who never heard of Yes came to the shows, and you know, everything worked. The lights, the staging was beautiful. The spaceship stage and the lasers and the everything worked really on that tour, and we had a great time.
It had to be a pleasure every night to perform when you realized that technically that it was how superior it was in that era versus 10 years earlier.
Yeah. There were a lot of things that we were able to do, you know, that hadn't been done before, like no instruments on stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a completely clean stage. We had everything hidden. You know, the guitars were radio guitars. It was very clean looking, and the technology of the keyboards and or the sampling stuff that we did on the album, I could actually play, you know, on stage because the technology was there. So it was fun.
Then years later, you guys get together with all members of Yes. Was there eight of you that toured?
Eight of us. Yeah, on the Union tour.
And I think one of the I saw the documentary. I do remember watching it, where you and Rick were basically talking shop and how much fun it was to see how much what your interpretations of the different songs were.
Rick and I had a lot of fun together. It was. You know, that in a way, there was not as much pressure because there were so many people covering everyone's parts and doing everything that, you know, would be a little more difficult with a five-piece band. And Rick and I got on really well. We, you know, divvied up the parts and you know, he's probably the funniest guy in the world anyway.
Oh, he is.
Oh, yeah.
Well, all I wanted to say is thank you very much for all the pleasure and enjoyment that you've given me over the years. I think a lot of times musicians don't really realize what they bring to our lives. And Yes was definitely a very big part of my life. And to this day, I still enjoy listening to the recordings from the very beginning, and it's all because of Tony Kaye and your fellow musicians. It was absolutely fantastic.
Well, thank you, Larry. It's been a fun ride, that's for sure.
I'll bet. We have to do this again, Tony, down the road, because I think we barely scratched the surface, and here our hour's just about up. Gosh.
Well, it went by really quickly, and thanks for inviting me to come on. It was great.
Well, I'm glad.
We'll do it again.
And if you ever get to Indiana, one way or the other, I invite you to our animal compound. I'll show you a tiger or two, if you would like.
Well, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, it might give you musical inspiration. And like I said before, go ahead.
Yeah, it probably would, actually. I mean, I'm a big animal fan, so.
Well, we all are.
It would be very cool. If I get close to you, I'll give you a buzz.
Oh, please do. Dr. Day, what an amazing show tonight. Gosh.
Amazing. And like you said, we need more time.
We needed more time.
I'm going to have to give Tony two good fingers up tonight.
Okay.
Oh, thank you, then.
We want to thank Melissa Hovey and Wayne Larson for their responsibilities. They've done so well tonight. And remind everyone that next week on the show, Betty Moon, but what a great show tonight with Tony Kaye of Yes and a variety of other musical groups. What a great night. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next Thursday. And thank you, Tony.
Thanks, Larry.
You've been listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.